Chapter 13. Wonderful News. The Sun Palace's sunroom was cold, despite fires roaring on hearths at either end of the room, thickly layered carpets, and a slanted glass roof that let in bright morning light, where snow caught on the thin muntins did not shield it, but it was suitable for holding audiences. Cadswain had thought it best not to appropriate the throne room. So far, Lord Dobraine had remained quiet about her holding Caroline Damodred and Darlin Cisnera. She saw no better way to keep them from going on with their mischief than keeping them in a firm grip. But Dobraine might begin to fuss over that if she pushed beyond what he considered proper. He was too close to the boy for her to want to force him, and faithful to his oaths. She could look back on her life and recall failures, some bitterly regretted, and mistakes that had cost lives, but she could not afford mistakes or failure here. Most definitely not failure. Light, she wanted to bite someone. "I demand the return of my windfinder, Aes Sedai." Harinadin Togara, all in green brocaded silk, sat rigidly in front of Cadswain, her full mouth tight. Despite an unlined face, white streaked her straight black hair. Wave mistress of her clan for 10 years, she had commanded a large vessel long before that. Her sailmistress, Daradin Selaan, a young woman all in blue, sat on a chair placed a careful foot farther back in accordance with their notions of propriety. The pair might have been dark carvings of outrage, and their outlandish jewelry somehow added to the effect. Neither so much as flickered an eye toward Eben, when he bowed and offered silver goblets of hot spiced wine on a tray. The boy did not seem to know what to do next when they took nothing. Frowning uncertainly, he remained bent until Daigyan plucked at his red coat and led him away smiling, an amused pouter pigeon in dark blue slashed with white. A slender lad with a big nose and large ears, never to be called handsome, much less pretty, but she was very possessive of him. They took seats close together on a padded bench in front of one of the fireplaces and began playing cat's cradle. "Your sister is assisting us in learning what happened on the unfortunate day," Cadswain said smoothly and somewhat absently. Taking a swallow of her own spiced wine, she waited, uncaring whether they saw her impatience. No matter how Dobraine grumbled about how impossible it was to meet the terms of that incredible bargain Rafella and Marana had made on behalf of the Althor boy, he still might have handled the sea folk himself. She could hardly give them half of her mind. Probably that was just as well for them. If she focused on the Athaan Mier, she would be hard-pressed not to swat them like bite-me's, though they were not the real source of her exasperation. 5 sisters were arrayed around the fireplace at the other end of the sunroom from Daigyan and Eben. Nasuna had a large wood-bound volume from the palace library spread on a reading stand in front of her chair. Like the others, she wore a plain woolen dress more suited to a merchant than an Aes Sedai. If any regretted the lack of silks or money for silks, they did not show it. Serene, with her thin beaded braids, stood working at a large embroidery frame, her needle making the tiny stitches of yet another flower in a field of blossoms. Arianne and Beldine were playing stones, watched by Elsa, who waited her turn to take on the winner. By all appearances, they were enjoying an idle morning, without a care in the world. Perhaps they knew they were here because she wanted to study them. Why had they sworn fealty to the Althor boy? At least Kiruna and the others had been in his presence when they decided to swear. She was willing to admit that no one could resist the influence of a Taviran when it caught you. But these 5 had taken a harsh penance for kidnapping him and reached their decision to offer oath before they were brought near him. In the beginning she had been inclined to accept their various explanations, but over the last few days that inclination had taken hard knocks. Disturbingly hard knocks. "My windfinder is not subject to your authority, Aes Sedai," Harina said sharply, as if denying the blood connection. "Shallan must and will be returned to me at once." Dera nodded curt agreement. Cadswain thought the sailmistress might do the same if Harina ordered her to jump from a cliff. In the Athaan Mier's hierarchy, Dera stood a long distance below Harina, and that was almost as much as Cadswain knew of them. The sea folk might prove useful or might not, but she could find a way to get a grip on them in any case. "This is an Aes Sedai inquiry," she replied blandly. "We must follow Tower law." Loosely interpreted, to be sure. She had always believed the spirit of the law was far more important than the letter. Harina puffed up like an adder and began yet another harangue listing her rights and demands, but Cadswain listened with half an ear. She could almost understand Arion, a pale black-haired Ilianer, fiercely insisting that she must be at the boy's side when he fought the last battle. And Beldine, so new to the shawl that she had not yet achieved agelessness, so determined to be everything that a green should be. And Elza, a pleasant-faced Andoran whose eyes almost glowed when she spoke of making certain that he lived to face the Dark One. Another green, and even more intense than most. Nessuna, hunched forward to peer at her book, looked like a black-eyed bird examining a worm. A brown, she would climb into a box with a scorpion if she wanted to study it. Serene might be fool enough to be startled that anyone thought her pretty, much less stunning, but the white insisted on the cool precision of her logic. Althor was the dragon reborn, and logically she must follow him. Tempestuous reasons, idiotic reasons, yet she could have accepted them, if not for the others. The door to the hall opened to admit Verin and Sorelia. The leathery, white-haired Aiel woman handed something small to Verin that the brown tucked into her belt pouch. Verin was wearing a flowered brooch on her simple bronze-colored dress, the first jewelry Cadswain had ever seen on her aside from her great serpent ring. "That will help you sleep," Sorelia said. "But remember, just 3 drops in water or 1 in wine. A little more and you might sleep a day or longer. Much more and you will not wake. There is no taste to warn you, so you must be careful." So Verin was having trouble sleeping, too. Cadswain had not had a good night's rest since the boy fled the Sun Palace. If she did not find one soon, she thought she might bite someone. Nessuna and the others were eyeing Sorelia uneasily. The boy had made them apprentice themselves to the Wise Ones, and they had learned that the Aiel women took that very seriously. One snap of Sorelia's bony fingers could end their idle morning. Harina leaned forward out of her chair and gave Cudswain's cheek a sharp tap with her fingers. "You are not listening to me," she said harshly. Her face was a thunderhead, and that of her sail mistress scarcely less stormy. "You will listen!" Cadswain put her hands together and regarded the woman over her fingertips. "No." She would not stand the wave mistress on her head here and now. She would not send the woman back to her apartments weeping. She would be as diplomatic as Corrin could wish. Hastily she scanned through what she had heard. "You speak for the mistress of the ships to the Athaan Mier, with all of her authority, which is more than I can imagine," she said mildly. "If your windfinder is not returned to you within the hour, you will see that the Coromor punishes me severely. You require an apology for your windfinder's imprisonment, and you require me to make Lord Dobrain set aside the land promised by the Coromor immediately. I believe that covers the essential points, except for the one about having her flogged." "Good," Harina said, leaning back comfortably, in command now. Her smile was sickeningly self-satisfied. "You will learn that I do not care a fig for your Coromor," Cadswain continued, her voice still mild. "All the figs in the world were for the dragon reborn, but not one for the Coromor." She did not alter her tone by a hair. "If you ever touch me again without permission, I will have you stripped, striped, bound, and carried back to your rooms in a sack." Well, diplomacy had never been her strongest point. "If you do not cease pestering me about your sister, well, I might actually grow angry." Standing, she ignored the sea-folk woman's indignant puffing and gaping, and raised her voice to be heard at the end of the room. "Serene!" The slender Taraboner whirled from her embroidery, beaded braids clicking, and hurried to Cadswain's side, barely hesitating before spreading her dark gray skirts in a curtsy. The Wise Ones had had to teach them to leap when a Wise One spoke, but more than custom made them leap for her. There truly were advantages to being a legend, especially an unpredictable legend. "Escort these 2 to their rooms," Cadswain commanded. "They wish to fast and meditate on civility. See that they do, and if they offer one uncivil word, spank them both. But be diplomatic about it. Serene gave a start, half opening her mouth as if to protest the illogic of that, but one glance at Cadzwain's face and she quickly turned to the Atha'an Mier women, gesturing for them to rise. Harina sprang to her feet, her dark face hard and scowling. Before she could utter a word of her no doubt furious tirade, though, Dara touched her arm and leaned close to whisper into her ring-heavy ear behind a cupped hand covered with dark tattoos. Whatever the sailmistress had to say, Harina closed her mouth. Her expression certainly did not soften, yet she eyed the sisters at the far end of the room, and after a moment curtly motioned Serene to lead the way. Harina might pretend that it was her decision to leave, but Dara followed so close on her heels she appeared to be hurting her, and shot an uneasy glance back over her shoulder before the door shut her from sight. Cadzwain almost regretted giving that frivolous order. Serene would do exactly as she had been told. The sea folk women were an irritant, and useless thus far besides. The irritation must be removed so she could concentrate on what was important, and if she found a use for them, tools needed to be shaped one way or another. She was too angry with them to care how that was done, and it might as well begin now as later. No, she was angry with the boy, but she could not lay hands on him yet. With a loud harumph, Sorelia turned from watching Serene and the Atha'an Mier go and directed her scowl at the sisters gathered at the end of the solar. Bracelets clattered on her wrists as she adjusted her shawl. Another woman not in her best temper. The sea folk had peculiar notions of Aiel savages, though in truth not that much stranger than some Cadzwain herself had believed before meeting Sorelia, and the wise one did not like them a hair. Cadzwain went to meet her with a smile. Sorelia was not a woman you made come to you. Everyone thought they were becoming friends, which they might yet, she realized in surprise, but no one knew of their alliance. Eben appeared with his tray, and appeared relieved when she set her half-empty goblet on it. "Late last night," Sorelia said as the red-coated boy hurried back to Daigyan. "Chaisain Nurbeya asked to serve the Karakarn." Disapproval lay heavy in her voice. "Before first light, Janine Pavlara asked, then Inina Darrenhold, then Vayela Kamsa. They had not been allowed to speak to one another. There could be no collusion. I accepted their pleas." Cadzwain made a vexed sound. "I suppose you already have them serving penance," she murmured, thinking hard. 19 sisters had been prisoners in the Aiel camp. 19 sisters sent by that fool Elida to kidnap the boy, and now they all had sworn to follow him. These last were the worst. What could make red sisters swear fealty to a man who can channel? Varen began to make an observation, but fell silent for the Aiel woman. Strangely, Varen had taken to her own enforced apprenticeship like a heron to the marsh. She spent more time in the Aiel camp than out of it. "Not penance, Cadzwain Maladrin." Sorelia made a dismissive gesture with one sinewy hand in another rattle of gold and ivory bracelets. "They are attempting to meet To that cannot be met. As foolish in its way as our naming them Datsang in the first place. But perhaps they are not beyond redemption if they are willing to try," she allowed grudgingly. Sorelia more than merely disliked those 19 sisters. She gave a thin smile. "In any event, we will teach them much they need to learn." The woman seemed to believe all Aes Sedai could do with time apprenticing under the wise ones. "I hope you will continue to watch them all closely," Cadzwain said. "Especially these last four." She was sure they would keep that ridiculous oath, if not always in ways the boy would like, but there was always the possibility that one or two might be Black Aja. Once she had thought herself on the point of rooting out the Black, only to watch her quarry slip through her fingers like smoke. Her bitterest failure, except possibly for failing to learn what Caroline Damodred's cousin had been up to in the borderlands, until the knowledge was years too late to do any good. Now even the Black Aja seemed a diversion from what was truly important. "Apprentices are always watched closely," the weathered woman replied. "I think I must remind these others to be grateful for being allowed to loll about like clan chiefs." The remaining four sisters in front of the fireplace rose with alacrity at her approach, made deep curtsies, and listened carefully to what she told them in a low voice with much finger-shaking. Soralia might think she had much to teach them, but they had already learned that an Aes Sedai shawl offered no protection to a wise one's apprentice. To seemed a great deal like penance to Cadswain.
"She is formidable," Verin murmured. "I am very glad she is on our side, if she is."
Cadswain gave her a sharp look. "You have the appearance of a woman with something to say that you don't want to. About Soralia?"
That alliance was very vaguely defined. Friendship or no friendship, she and the Wise One still might turn out to be aiming at different goals.
"Not that," the stout little woman sighed. Despite a square face, tilting her head to one side made her look like a very plump sparrow.
"I know it was not my business, Cadswain, but Bera and Kiruna were getting nowhere with our guests, so I had a little talk alone with Shallan. After a little gentle questioning, she spilled out the whole story, and Aileel confirmed everything once she realized I already knew. Soon after the Sea Folk first arrived here, Aileel approached Shallan, hoping to learn what they wanted with young Althor. For her part, Shallan wanted to learn whatever she could about him and about the situation here. That led to meetings, which led to friendship, which led to them becoming pillow friends. As much from loneliness as anything else, I suspect. In any case, that was what they were hiding, more than their mutual snooping."
"They put up with days under the question to hide that?" Cadswain said incredulously. Bera and Kiruna had had the pair howling. Verin's eyes twinkled with suppressed mirth.
"Kyrianen are prim and prudish, Cadswain. In public, at least. They might carry on like rabbits when the curtains are drawn, but they wouldn't admit to touching their own husbands if anyone might overhear. And the Sea Folk are almost as straight-laced. At least, Shallan is married to a man with duties elsewhere, and breaking marriage vows is a very serious crime. A breach of proper discipline, it seems. If her sister found out, Shallan would be... windfinder on a rowboat, I think her exact words were."
Cadswain was aware of her hair ornaments swaying as she shook her head. When the two women had been discovered right after the attack on the palace, bound and gagged and stuffed under Aileel's bed, she had suspected they knew more of the attack than they were admitting. Once they refused to say why they had been meeting in secret, she was sure. Perhaps even that they were involved in some way, though the attack apparently was the work of renegade Ashaman. Supposedly renegade, at least. All that time and effort wasted on nothing. Or perhaps not quite nothing, if they were so desperate to keep things hidden. "Return the Lady Aileel to her apartments with apologies for her treatment, Verin. Give her very tenuous assurances that her confidences will be kept. Be sure she is aware just how tenuous, and suggest strongly that she might wish to keep me abreast of anything she hears concerning her brother. Blackmail was a tool she disliked using, but she had already used it on the three Ashaman, and Toram Rieton might still cause trouble, even if his rebellion did seem to have evaporated. In truth, she cared little who sat on the Sun Throne, yet the plots and schemes of those who considered thrones important often had a way of interfering with more significant matters." Verin smiled, her bun bobbing as she nodded.
"Oh, yes, I think that will work very nicely, especially since she dislikes her brother intensely. The same for Shallan, I suppose? Except that you will want to hear of events among the Atha'an Mier? I'm not certain how far she will betray Harina, no matter the consequences to herself."
"She will betray what I require her to betray," Cadswain said grimly. "Keep her until tomorrow, late."
Harina must not be allowed to think for a moment that her demands were being met. The Sea Folk were another tool to be used on the boy. No more. Everyone and everything had to be viewed in that light. Beyond Verin, Coriel slipped into the sunroom and shut the door carefully behind her, as if hoping not to disturb anyone. That was not her way. Boyishly slim, with thick black eyebrows and a mass of glossy black hair flowing down her back that gave her a wild appearance no matter how neat her clothes were, the yellow was much more likely to sweep into a room laughing. Rubbing the end of her upturned nose, she looked at Cadswain hesitantly, with none of the usual sparkle in her blue eyes. Cadswain made a peremptory gesture at her, and Coriel drew a breath and glided across the carpets, gripping her yellow-slashed blue skirts with both hands. Eyeing the sisters clustered around Soralia at the far end of the room, and Daigyan playing cat's cradle with Eben at the other end, she spoke in a soft voice that carried the lilting accents of Murundi.
"I have the most wonderful news, Katswain."
By the sound of her, she was not at all certain how wonderful it was.
"I know you said I should keep Dahmer busy here in the palace, but he insisted on looking at the sisters still in the Aiel camp. Mild-tempered as he is, he's very insistent when he wants to be, and sure as the sun, there's nothing can't be healed. And, well, the fact of it is, he's gone and healed Urgine. Katswain, it's as if she'd never been..."
She trailed off, unable to say the word. It hung in the air, even so. Stilled. "Wonderful news," Katswain said flatly. It was. Every sister carried the fear somewhere deep inside that she might be cut off from the power, and now a way to heal what could not be healed had been discovered. By a man. There would be tears and recriminations before this was done with. In any case, while every sister who heard would consider it a world-shaking discovery, in more ways than one, a man, it was a storm in a teacup compared to Randall Thor. "I suppose she is offering herself up to be beaten like the others?"
"She won't need to," Varin said absently. She was frowning at an ink stain on her finger, but she seemed to be studying something beyond. "The wise ones apparently decided that Rand had punished Urgine and the other two sufficiently when he did what he did. At the same time they were treating the others like worthless animals, they have been working to keep those three alive. I heard talk about finding Ranila a husband."
"Urgine knows all about the oaths the others swore."
Kareel's voice took on tones of amazement. "She started weeping for the loss of her warders almost as soon as Dahmer finished with her, but she's ready to swear, too. The thing of it is, Dahmer wants to try with Sashal and Ranila, too." Surprisingly, she drew herself up, almost defiantly. She'd always been as arrogant as any other yellow, but she had always known where she stood with Cadswain. "I can't see letting a sister remain in that condition if there's a way out, Cadswain. I want to let Dahmer try his hand with them."
"Of course, Kareel."
It seemed some of Dahmer's insistence was rubbing off on her. Katswain was willing to let that go, so long as it did not go too far. She had begun gathering sisters she trusted, those here with her and others, the day she first heard of strange events in Shinar. Her eyes and ears had kept watch on Swan Sanche and Moiraine Damodred for years without learning anything useful until then. Yet just because she trusted them did not mean she intended to let them start going their own way. Too much lay at stake. But in any case, she could not leave a sister like that either. The door banged open to admit Jahar at a run, the silver bells on the ends of his dark braids jangling. Heads turned to look at the youth in the well-fitted blue coat Maurice had chosen for him. Even Soralia and Serene stared. But the words that came out of him in a rush drove away thoughts of how pretty his sun-dark face was.
"Alana's unconscious, Cadswain. She just collapsed in the hallway. Maurice had her taken to a bedchamber and sent me for you."
Riding over exclamations of shock, Cadswain gathered Kareel and Soralia, who could not be left behind in this, and ordered Jahar to lead the way. Varin came as well, and Cadswain did not stop her. Varin had a way of noticing what others missed. The black-liveried servants had no idea who or what Jahar was, but they stepped lively to get out of Cadswain's way as she walked quickly along behind him. She would have told him to be quicker about it, but any faster and she would have had to run. Before she had gone very far, a short man with the front of his head shaved, in a dark coat with horizontal stripes of color down the front, stepped into her path and bowed. She had to stop for him.
"Grace favor you, Cadswain Sedai," he said smoothly. "Forgive me for bothering you when you are in such a hurry, but I thought I should tell you that the Lady Caroline and the High Lord Darlin are no longer in the Lady Arilyn's palace. They are on a river ship bound for Tyr. Beyond your reach by this time, I fear."
"You might be surprised what is within my reach, Lord Dobrain," she said in a cold voice. She should have left at least one sister at Arilyn's palace, but she had been certain the pair was secure. Was this wise? She had no doubt it was his work, though she doubted he had the nerve to admit it. No wonder he had not pressed her over them. Her tone made no impression on the fellow, and he surprised her.
"The High Lord Darlin is to be the Lord Dragon's steward of Tyr, and it did seem wise to send the Lady Caroline out of the country.
She has forsworn her rebellion and her claims to the Sun Throne, but others still might try to use her. Perhaps, Cadswain Sedai, it was unwise to leave them in the charge of servants. Under the light, you must not hold them at fault. They were able to hold two guests, but not to stand up to my armsmen. Jahar was all but dancing with anxiety to go on. Maurice had a firm hand. Cadswain herself was anxious to reach Alana. "I hope you have the same opinion in a year," she said. Dobrain merely bowed. The bedchamber where Alana had been taken was the nearest that had been available, and it was not large, appearing smaller for the dark panelling that Kyrianin liked so much. It seemed quite crowded once everyone was inside. Maurice snapped her fingers and pointed, and Jahar retreated to a corner, but that helped little. Alana was lying on the bed, her eyes closed, with her warder, Ivone, kneeling beside it, chafing her wrist. "She seems afraid to wake," the tall, slender man said. "There's nothing wrong with her that I can tell, but she seems afraid." Coriel brushed him aside so she could cup Alana's face in her hands. The glow of Sidar surrounded the yellow, and the weave of healing settled on Alana, but the slim green did not even twitch. Coriel drew back, shaking her head. "My skill with healing, it may not equal yours, Coriel," Maurice said dryly, "but I did try." The accents of Tarabon were still strong in her voice after all these years, but she wore her dark hair drawn back severely from her stern face. Cadswain trusted her perhaps more than any of the others. "What do we do now, Cadswain?" Sorrelia stared at the woman stretched out on the bed with no expression beyond a thinning of her lips. Cadswain wondered whether she was re-evaluating their alliance. Verin was staring at Alana, too, and she looked absolutely terrified. Cadswain had not thought anything could frighten Verin that far, but she felt a thrill of terror herself. If she lost this connection to the boy now... "We sit down and wait for her to wake," she said in a calm voice. There was nothing else to do. Nothing.
"Where is he?" Demondred growled, clenching his fists behind his back. Standing with his feet apart, he was aware that he dominated the room. He always did. Even so, he wished Semirag or Masana were present. Their alliance was delicate, a simple agreement that they would not turn on one another until the others had been eliminated. Yet it had held all this time. Working together, they had unbalanced opponent after opponent, toppling many to their deaths or worse. But it was difficult for Semirag to attend these meetings, and Masana had been shy of late. If she was thinking of ending the alliance... "Althor has been seen in 5 cities, including that cursed place in the Waste, and a dozen towns since those blind fools, those idiots, failed in Kyrian. And that only includes the reports we have. The Great Lord only knows what else is crawling toward us by horse or sheep or whatever else these savages can find to carry a message." Grendel had chosen the setting, since she had been first to arrive, and it irritated him. View walls made the striped wooden floor appear to be surrounded by a forest full of brightly flowered vines and fluttering birds that were even more colorful. Sweet scents and soft bird calls filled the air. Only the arch of the doorway spoiled the illusion. Why did she want a reminder of what was lost? They could as soon make shock lances or show wings as a view wall outside of this place, close to Shael Ghul. In any case, she despised anything to do with nature, as he recalled. Osangar frowned at idiots and blind fools, as well he might, but he quickly smoothed that plain creased face, so unlike the one he had been born with. By whatever name he was called, he had always known who he dared challenge and who not. "A matter of chance," he said calmly, though he did begin dry-washing his hands. "An old habit." He was garbed like some ruler of this age, in a coat so heavy with golden embroidery that it almost hid the red of the cloth, and boots fringed with golden tassels. There was enough white lace at his neck and wrists to clothe a child. The man had never known the meaning of excess. If not for his particular skills, he never would have been chosen. Realizing what his hands were doing, Osengar snatched the tall Quendiyar wine glass from the round table beside his chair and inhaled the dark wine's aroma deeply.
"Simply probabilities," he murmured, trying to sound offhand. "Next time he will be killed or taken. Chance can't protect him forever."
"You are going to depend on chance?" Arengar was stretched out in a long, flowing chair, as though it were a bedchair. Directing a smoky smile at Osengar, she arched one leg on bare toes, so the slit in her bright red skirts exposed her to the hip. Every breath threatened to free her from the red satin that just contained her full breasts. All of her mannerisms had changed since she became a woman, but not the core of what had been placed into that female body. Demundred hardly scorned fleshly pleasures, but one day her cravings would be the death of her, as they already had been once. Not that he would mourn, of course, if the next time was final.
"You were responsible for watching him, Osengar," she went on, her voice caressing every syllable. "You and Demundred."
Osengar flinched, flicking his tongue against his lips, and she laughed throatily.
"My own charge is..."
She pressed a thumb down on the edge of the chair as if pinning something, and laughed again.
"I should think you would be more worried, Arengar," Grendel murmured over her wine.
She concealed her contempt about as well as the almost transparent silvery mist of her streath gown concealed her ripe curves.
"You and Osengar and Demundred, and Moradin, wherever he is. Perhaps you should fear Arthur's success as much as his failure."
Laughing, Arengar caught the standing woman's hand in one of hers. Her green eyes sparkled.
"And perhaps you could explain what you mean better if we were alone."
Grendel's gown turned to stark black, concealing smoke. Jerking her hand free with a coarse oath, she stalked away from the chair. Arengar giggled.
"What do you mean?"
Osengar said sharply, struggling out of his chair. Once on his feet, he struck a lecturer's pose, gripping his lapels, and his tone became pedantic.
"In the first place, my dear Grendel, I doubt that even I could devise a method to remove the Great Lord's shadow from Saidin. Althor is a primitive. Anything he tries inevitably will prove insufficient, and I, for one, cannot believe he can even imagine how to begin. In any event, we will stop him trying because the Great Lord commands it. I can understand fear of the Great Lord's displeasure if we somehow failed, unlikely as that might be. But why should those of us you named have any special fear?"
"Blind as ever, and dry as ever," Grendel murmured.
With a return of composure, her gown was clear mist again, though red. Perhaps she was not so calm as she pretended, or perhaps she wanted them to believe she was controlling some agitation. Except for the streath, her adornments all came from this age, fire drops in her golden hair, a large ruby dangling between her breasts, ornate golden bracelets on both wrists, and something quite strange that Demundred wondered whether anyone else had noticed. A simple ring of gold on the little finger of her left hand. Simple was never associated with Grendel.
"If the young man does somehow remove the shadow, well, you who channel Saidin will no longer need the Great Lord's special protection. Will he trust your loyalty, then?"
Smiling, she sipped her wine. Osengar did not smile. His face paled, and he scrubbed a hand across his mouth. Arengar sat up on the edge of her long chair, no longer trying to be sensuous. Her hands formed claws on her lap, and she glared at Grendel as if ready to go for her throat. Demundred's fists unclenched. It was out in the open at last. He had hoped to have Althor dead, or, failing that, captive, before this suspicion reared its head. During the War of Power, more than a dozen of the Chosen had died of the Great Lord's suspicion.
"The Great Lord is sure you are all faithful," Moradin announced, striding in as though he were the Great Lord of the Dark himself.
He had often seemed to believe he was, and the boy's face he wore now had not changed that. In spite of his words, that face was grim, and his unrelieved black made his name, Death, fit.
"You need not worry until he stops being sure."
The girl, Sindane, trotted at his heels like a bosomy little silver-haired pet in red and black. For some reason, Moradin had a rat riding his shoulder, pale nose sniffing the air, black eyes studying the room warily. Or for no reason, perhaps. A youthful face had not made him any saner, either.
"Why have you called us here?" Demundred demanded. "I have much to do and no time for idle talk."
Unconsciously, he tried to stand taller to match the other man.
"Messana is absent again," Moradin said, instead of answering. "A pity. She should hear what I have to say."
Plucking the rat from his shoulder by its tail, he watched the animal wave its legs futilely. Nothing except the rat seemed to exist for him.
"Small, apparently unimportant matters can become very important," he murmured. "This rat, whether Isam succeeds in finding and killing that other vermin, Fane. A word whispered in the wrong ear or not spoken to the right. A butterfly stirs its wings on a branch, and on the other side of the world a mountain collapses."
Suddenly the rat twisted, trying to sink its teeth into his wrist. Casually, he flung the creature away. In midair, there was a burst of flame, something hotter than flame, and the rat was gone. Moradin smiled. Demundred flinched in spite of himself. That had been the true power. He had felt nothing. A black speck floated across Moradin's blue eyes, then another in a steady stream. The man must have been using the true power exclusively since he last saw him to gain so many sa so quickly. He himself had never touched the true power except at need, great need. Of course, only Moradin had that privilege now, since his anointing. The man truly was insane to use it so freely. It was a drug more addictive than cyanide, more deadly than poison. Crossing the striped floor, Moradin laid a hand on Osengar's shoulder, his smile made more ominous by the saw. The shorter man swallowed and gave a wavering smile in return.
"It is well you've never considered how to remove the Great Lord's shadow," Moradin said quietly.
How long had he been outside? Osengar's smile grew even more sickly.
"Althor is not as wise as you. Tell them, Sindane."
The little woman drew herself up. By face and form, she was a luscious plum, ready for plucking, but her big blue eyes were glacial. A peach, perhaps. Peaches were poisonous here and now.
"You recall the Chordin call, I suppose?"
No amount of effort could make that low, breathy voice anything except sultry, but she managed to inject sarcasm.
"Luz Theron has two of the access keys, one for each. And he knows a woman strong enough to use the female of the pair. He plans to use the Chordin call for his deed."
Nearly everyone began to talk at once.
"I thought the keys were all destroyed,"
Arengar exclaimed, surging to her feet. Her eyes were wide with fear.
"He could shatter the world just trying to use the Chordin call."
"If you had ever read anything besides a history book, you would know they're almost impossible to destroy,"
Osengar snarled at her. But he was tugging at his collar, as if it were too tight, and his eyes seemed ready to fall out of his face.
"How can this girl know he has them? How?"
Grendel's wineglass had dropped from her hand as soon as the words were out of Sindane's mouth, bouncing end over end across the floor. Her gown turned as crimson as fresh blood, and her mouth twisted as if she were going to vomit.
"And you've just been hoping to blunder into him," she screamed at Demundred. hoping someone will find him for you. Fool! Fool!
Demondred thought Grendel had been a touch flamboyant even for her. He would wager the announcement had been no surprise to her. It seemed she bore watching. He said nothing. Putting a hand over his heart, for all the world like a lover, Moradin tilted up Sindane's chin on his fingertips. Resentment burned in her eyes, but her face might have been a doll's unchanging face. She certainly accepted his attentions like a pliable doll.
"Sindane knows many things," Moradin said softly. "And she tells me everything she knows. Everything."
The tiny woman's expression never altered, but she trembled visibly. She was a puzzle to Demondred. At first, he had thought she was Lanfear reincarnated. Bodies for transmigration supposedly were chosen by what was available, yet Osengar and Arengar were proof of the Great Lord's cruel sense of humor. He had been sure until Masana told him the girl was weaker than Lanfear. Masana and the rest thought she was of this age. Yet she spoke of Althor as Luz Theron, just as Lanfear had, and spoke of the Choan Kal as one familiar with the terror they had inspired during the War of Power. Only Balefire had been more feared, and only just. Or had Moradin taught her for purposes of his own, if he had any real purposes? There had always been times when the man's actions had been sheer madness.
"So it seems he must be killed after all," Demondred said.
Hiding his satisfaction was not easy. Randall Thor, or Luz Theron Telamon, he would rest easier when the fellow was dead.
"Before he can destroy the world, and us. Which makes finding him all the more urgent."
"Killed?" Moradin moved his hands as though weighing something. "If it comes to that, yes," he said finally. "But finding him is no problem. When he touches the Choadan Kal, you will know where he is. And you will go there and take him. Or kill him, if necessary." "The Nablus has spoken."
"As the Nablus commands," Sindane said eagerly, bowing her head,
and echoes of her ran around the room, though Arengar sounded sullen, Osengar desperate, and Grendel oddly thoughtful. Bending his neck hurt Demondred as much as speaking those words. So they would take Althor, while he was trying to use the Choan Dun Kal, no less. He and some woman drinking enough of the One Power to melt continents. But there had been no indication that Moradin would be with them, or his twin pets, Mogadin and Sindane. The man was nameless for now, but perhaps matters could be arranged so he did not get another body the next time he died. Perhaps it could be arranged soon.